Hey, welcome to You Might Have Missed It. This week we're coming post-apocalypse to bring you news. News of the future.
I'm Nathan.
I'm Adam.
And E3!
Yes, we're not actually at E3 or anywhere near E3.
Not even close.
But we are watching E3.
All the time.
Or have watched E3 at this point. Would for probably the last be a better way to put it. Just kind of hanging on the edge of our seats at every new game announcement. And I have to say that one big thing became very clear to me at the end of all of the presentations when everything has been kind of said and done.
One of the coolest E3s we've been through so far?
No, that I'm going to be broke.
Oh, yeah.
For at least the next 2 years.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, that actually just backs up my statement.
That's true.
But yeah, no, I'm right there with you. As if the Steam sale happening right now isn't bad enough.
Yeah, that definitely doesn't help matters.
No. Because watching E3, getting excited about video games, and oh look, there's a giant video game sale going on right.
Exactly. Yeah. It seems so well timed. Suspiciously.
You think they planned
well timed. I actually wonder if like the E3 announcements help them with selling games, or if their numbers have been down while E3 has been going on, because everyone's been watching stuff about games coming out, but no one has actually just like been around long enough to actually buy games.
Oh, everybody. Well, they did set a record for logins.
Oh, did they?
Most consecutive logins, 10 million people all at once. On Sunday, I believe.
Oh, wow. Okay. So just as E3 began then.
Yeah.
They got the consecutive launch. Well, I wonder if that had anything to do with Fallout 4, the release date and so on being announced, is that everyone logged in and just pre-ordered.
The right Fallout there. Franchise is up for sale.
Yes. And I have to say, if you do not own it, you should. You should own all of the Fallout franchise. You have 4 months, I believe now. 4 months to play through July, yeah. August, September, October.
Yeah, it's coming out in November.
5 months. Four or five months. Ish. Yeah. To play through Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas. And, you know, Fallout 1 and Fallout 2, just for good measure. And you may as well play through Fallout Tactics while you're at
Just as a warning, when you play Fallout New Vegas, I forget if it was Fallout 3 or Fallout New Vegas, but the chick that is leading you through the tutorial, do not shoot her.
I don't understand how you shot her. I still honestly don't understand this, because I started playing through Fallout New Vegas again.
Okay. Did you shoot her?
No, okay. I don't know how you do that. Oh. Like, I mean, obviously, aim, gun, pull, trigger is the answer to that question. But, like, I would have to have done it on purpose.
I was spinning around trying to shoot rats.
I believe you mean geckos.
Whatever.
Because that's what you killed at the beginning.
Dude, oh, okay. This was how many years ago that I did this?
I don't know. For me, it was like 3 days ago. So... Right. No, I decided to replay through New Vegas because I want to do it on the hardcore version, which I haven't done before because it's always seemed like too much of a pain in the ass for me.
Okay.
I really want to see if this time around I can stomach kind of not the bad ending, but the bad ending, which is going with Caesar's Legion as the winners, because I've done everyone else. At this point, I've sided with every other faction, except for basically the evil faction, which is, you know, the evil misogynistic slavers, you know, Roman Empire type of thing. I just have not done their side of the conflict, and I'm curious if I will be able to.
Oh, interesting.
Like, if I will be able to stomach that save game.
Boy, I wish I knew what you were talking about. That'd be awesome.
It would be, but you know, you have... Several months.
I have a few months. Yes, I could
totally try to
play Fallout again.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
That is a possibility.
I highly recommend it. Just replaying Fallout. Because we are getting ready for Fallout 4, which was at least for me, the biggest announcement that came at E3 this year. And I have to admit, it did not disappoint, the announcement at least.
Shit, details.
Yeah, yeah. That was what surprised me the most, I think, about it, is this was probably the most detailed announcement at E3 for a game.
Period.
Yeah.
Not everyone just out else, of the stuff we're excited about, but out of everything that came out, they talked about Fallout so much, it was almost its own damn panel.
It kind of was. I think the only other one that may have gotten that level of detail was, from the same panel, was Doom. But I don't think either of us are super excited about that so much.
Yeah, no, not really.
It looks interesting, but it's, it's Doom.
It looks like Doom.
That's which is, if you enjoy Doom and you've enjoyed those games in the past, then you already kind of know whether or not you want to get that game.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the same with Fallout, to be honest. But this one actually seems a little bit different than previous ones. Not in terms of setting, but just in terms of scope for the game.
Fallout. Okay.
Sorry, we're on Fallout.
Okay, yeah. We're talking about Fallout.
We're talking about Fallout. This is the Fallout...
Fallout section.
Section of the podcast. So if you're not interested in Fallout, get the fuck out. I don't even want to know you.
If you're not interested in Fallout, you're probably listening to the wrong podcast.
Exactly. You're listening to the wrong group of people here.
Yeah.
They're the wrong guy.
We talk about games. Okay. What are you doing here?
No, but it's going to be one of the most, I think, expansive Fallouts. It's one of the biggest things they've said. Larger than even Skyrim. And if you played Skyrim...
It's scary.
Yeah, that's a little frightening. Yeah. Like, you can spend hours upon hours upon hours in Skyrim and not get to the end. So I cannot imagine what Fallout is going to be like, just from if the base game is bigger than Skyrim.
That's...
Yeah. So, very big open world in the Fallout universe, which was right there. I'm like, take my money. I'm sold. I am in all the way.
And then they showed the special edition.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll get to that later. I think we'll talk about I'm going to talk about the bells and whistles of the Fallout presentation, I think, at the end here, because those to me are fun, but they're not what made me excited about the game.
Oh, tell me you don't want a Pip-Boy.
Oh, I want a Pip-Boy, believe me. So the first thing is that they released the trailer about a week before.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason we missed the last show was because I was in a state of catatonia the whole time, just completely out of it for that week.
He went into utter ecstasy as soon as...
Exactly. Just my mantra, Fallout's coming. Fallout's coming.
That was basically...
We tried to record the podcast, and that was all I could say through the entire thing. There's just literally an hour and a half of Nico Adam, and me just going, Fallout.
We have a show to make.
Fallout. Fallout's coming. Did you hear Fallout? Fallout. And then I booted up some Fallout New Vegas and managed to drive myself out of that for a little while. Gave myself a quick fix.
Thank God. Thank God he's with us now.
Exactly.
But but he's back.
Yeah. But the trailer was really good. One thing that I noticed and a lot of other people kind of commented on is it looked a lot like New Vegas type of graphics, from Fallout 3, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't really look like they were using a new engine to build it, which is bad when you're talking about a 5-year-old engine. It didn't look particularly great. A lot of it seemed janky, is the best way I can put it. A lot of the graphics just looked dated. But when they showed it at E3 and actually had, some gameplay, I don't know if it wasn't live gameplay, but it was gameplay footage.
Right, there was some pre-recorded gameplay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The graphics looked much better from the in-game engine.
Like, I will go and say
incredibly crisp.
It looked beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely beautiful.
It looked like a post-apocalyptic hellhole.
Exactly, but in the best way possible.
But in the best render possible.
Well, what was interesting, and jumping into the at least what little of the story we know, is that you actually get to spend some time in pre-war Fallout universe.
You have a dog!
Well, you have a dog, and that's post-war, but... The pre-war universe is something you don't really get to see. You get to see remnants of it, obviously throughout the entire world. And then you get to see maybe like a couple films throughout it. And then I think every once in a while you'll hit like a virtual simulation of what the world was like.
Right.
But obviously, you know, you can kind of guess that that's what it was like. It was very 1950s, Keech America type of thing.
Yeah. The only thing you see is really like right in the beginning, as soon as you hit new game on it, you get like the little prequel fit, the little initial cinematic to start off the game. And that's about as pre-war as you get.
Well, you do also actually like get some simulations in Fallout 3. There's a simulation of the world as it was. I won't get into why you're there because it gets into plot details. Obviously, we're probably well past the point of spoilers for that. But since we're talking about Fallout 4 and I really want you to play those games, let's just say that you get to spend some time in a simulation of the world as it was before the war through the lens of an insane person. And then same thing in New Vegas, you kind of get simulations of the world with some of the areas that are maintained, I guess, would be the best way to put it, by creatures, people, a person who is very pre-war himself. So you get to kind of see these areas, but you don't really get a good sense of that. So it's really exciting to actually be able to see that world, even if it's just through the opening introduction.
Mm-hmm.
The other interesting thing is that you're actually playing a pre-war character in the game. And they don't go into details of like how that works. Obviously, probably some sort of like suspended animation or something like that. But the character that you start the game out with is the character you play. And, you know, you come back to the place you left 200 years later. After the bombs have fallen, after all of this has, you know, gone down. And as they said in the presence of the sole survivor of Vault 111, which is super cool. It's interesting to see somebody who has not necessarily experienced the horrors of the world, because throughout the Fallout series, there are actually characters who are pre-war, but they are either, machines in some way, or they're ghouls. Pretty much all of the ghouls are characters who were born and survived before the war even started. You know, a lot of them are like, 200 years old, and they forget a lot of stuff, obviously. And they're hard to judge how accurate they are because of the massive amounts of radiation that they've taken in. So it'll be interesting to kind of see how that works out. So the story looks very exciting. They haven't gone, again, into a lot of detail about what that will be. And I assume that we'll get to see those reveals throughout the next couple months. But jumping back into the gameplay side really quick, one of the coolest things that they're introducing is the ability to rebuild the world, or at least build the world in some way. And they showed a little bit of it, which is building basically hubs. And normally you would see these hubs, you know, pre-built. They would be places you would go, and they would become, you know, the areas that you expand out and do your quests from throughout the game, you know, similar to the cities in Skyrim and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not a Fallout aficionado, you've probably got some Skyrim information, or just in general RPGs and open world RPGs. You hit a town or a, you know, whatever, and then you do all of the quests from there. In this case, it sounds like you're actually going to either be building these towns or improving them, and then trying to attract people to them and so on. And basically, instead of being, you know, the lone wanderer or the courier, you know, somebody who's essentially passing through these areas and affecting them, you're actually rebuilding them in some way. So taking a much more active hand in how the world progresses in this case. And looking at the interface board and seeing how they've done that, if you're familiar with, I think it was Hearthfire was the expansion for Skyrim, is that right?
No, I didn't really play Skyrim.
Oh, you didn't? Okay.
Nope. You were talking and I was actually extending, when you kept like mentioning things from Skyrim, I would actually draw parallels to either Dragon Age Inquisition or Witcher.
Yeah, and it's hard to draw those kind of parallels because I don't know how open world those games are. I mean, they're fairly open world, but they're gated. They're level gated in a lot of ways, correct?
Kind of. Not as much as you'd think. I mean, they might be level gated, like you'll have like certain sections. Dragon Age is definitely level gated, but Witcher, I mean, you have like the separate towns and you have fast travel between them, but it's very much kind of a fluid transition between them. So, but you do have like towns that you'll go to, and you know, after you clear like a certain area of monsters, people kind of congregate to that point and build a town there and stuff. It's
not at all similar to Skyrim or Fallout, so
the old Fallouts, but you're talking about like base building, attracting people, creating a hub, and that's what I'm saying is like the Witcher, there are places like that, so that's the parallel I was drawing.
Yeah, and this is new for this particular game series, actually, any of the series.
Oh, yeah. Well, you actually build it.
Yeah, you are actually, it's kind of Minecrafting.
Yeah.
Down to the breaking things apart for parts.
Yeah, it's like metal girders in order to establish a frame. I mean, that's new, not just for Fallout. That's new for like any RPG, open world RPG. That's just amazing.
Well, and the reason I mentioned Hearthfire is because you did a little bit of that in that, except that you would buy the raw materials and then it would build based on plans. Whereas in this case, you have a lot more freedom, is that you actually seem to be building them not to like a specification, but to your specification. And then you can decorate and do all of these other things in a much more dynamic way from your point of view. Mm-hmm. And the interface that they showed off looks really good. and if it plays as well as it looks, I am one going to be super impressed. And like my time will just be all Fallout all the time. You will just never see me in another game until probably a year from now. But they will release DLCs. So then you will be like 2 years later, I'll emerge and I'll be like, is there new Fallout yet? Have they released something new yet?
No, and at that point it'd be like, no, it's only been 2 years since the last one. You've got at least five to go.
I've got three. Because Fallout New Vegas was in 2010.
Right. Fallout New Vegas was in 2010, but Fallout 3 was in 2008. So it went 2 years, 5 years. Next one's going to be eight.
I'm going to choose to not believe you and move on.
Just ignore the fact that I said that. Otherwise, Adam's going to be in like some post-traumatic stress.
All I know is that I've got gaming covered for 2 years with Fallout 4. So, you know, I can think ahead further after that point.
Right.
But the other thing that's interesting about that, that crafting system, and specifically kind of how it builds out, is that crafting itself has been expanded quite a bit. And if, for those, obviously, we've played Fallout New Vegas or Fallout 3 or something like that. Crafting has kind of been a bastard child of systems within that, is that you have some really cool stuff you can make. That's some really funny stuff. Like there's the junk launcher from both games, which is, you know, you build it and then you can launch just any of the random crap you find as ammunition. And there is a lot of random crap in these games. But you can never really do anything with it beyond that. And a couple like collection and fetch quests that you can do that will use specific types. Like one of the ones that I just picked up in my most recent playthrough is I have to find random pieces of metal, whether it's scrap metal or old bent cans or something like that, to fulfill work orders for somebody. And it's, you know, it's a thing you can do. You can go and find all of this stuff, but it's not really crafting. And normally this kind of stuff that you would pick up would just be literally junk. You know, you might sell it for currency to the traders and so on. But honestly, you pick up so much stuff that's worth so much more. Normally you would just kind of pass by it and be like, yeah, it's not worth it. It's not really worth anything here. But to combat that, one thing that's interesting is I was also looking into mods for Fallout in general, Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas. And one of the most interesting things about the modding community is that they have taken all of this junk and created these really robust crafting systems where, you know, you're doing a lot of the stuff that I saw in the trailer, which is, you know, you're grabbing toasters and breaking them down for parts and stuff like that. And then you're able to use the parts you get from all of that and rebuild all of this other stuff out of it that's not normally available in the base game. So, you know, in addition, obviously, to playing through like in the hardcore mode, I've also been, bling around with some of the mods from that. And it's interesting to see how a lot of the ideas and systems that were previously kind of only the realm of modders are now being built straight into the base game. And then expanded upon in a way that only the people, you know, obviously building the systems from the ground up can. And I think weapons and armor that they showed off in this are one of the best examples of that, is that it's probably, you can take like a gun and turn it into anything. And the example they used throughout the trailer for it was the plasma guns. And you could take a basic plasma pistol or, you know, or laser pistol or something like that, and then, you know, add different components to it and turn it into a rifle or a shotgun or something like that. And just being able to mod it into all of these different iterations of the same weapon just looks absolutely amazing. To be able to do. And then the same thing with a lot of the armor stuff. And they mentioned specifically, it seems like power armor is going to play a big part in this newest version, which it's always played a big part in the game, because it's one of the most iconic things out of Fallout is those pictures of, you know, the Brotherhood of Steel or, these other, you know, any of the other ones in these, you know, huge powered armor suits. But you're actually going to be able to customize those suits and so on with your character and then use them. And it seems like fairly early on, you will get a suit of power armor that you can use. And it may be that it's actually an entirely new combat system based around the power armor rather than just being an outfit you wear. It's now actually like a mecha system or something like that. Mm-hmm. So that could be a direction that they're going with that. But like I said, in terms of crafting, in terms of building, they've really expanded all of these systems out. And what's interesting, the thing they kept mentioning, is that all of that is optional. You know, if you just want to go through and run and gun or just, you know, make it through the story or something like that, you don't have to do these things.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So all of these kind of really exciting systems are systems that you can pick and choose to be part of. And I think that's a really cool way to build the game. Because one thing that could happen, and you look at it and you look at all of these systems and the massive size of the world and stuff like that, that they've announced, is that it could be very easy to get overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
By the game. And obviously for some people like me, I want to be overwhelmed. You know, I want to jump into this and I want to just be like, yes, everything.
Hit me in the face with everything. It all.
Yeah, you know, give me a massive dose of Fallout right now. And
I've got 2 years to spare. Don't worry.
Exactly. I've got plenty of time to mess around with this. But I can definitely see people who just want to jump in and do the story, because that's another thing that they're really good at with the Fallout games, is they tell a really good story. So the fact that they haven't given away any plot details or anything like that doesn't worry me, because I think that's the one thing that they're, you know, they're really good at.
Yeah, other than like the first 2 minutes of, oh, by the way, you wake up in Vault 111 and you're the only one.
Yeah, exactly.
That's your,
you know, you emerge from the vault 200 years later.
It's like, great, I know that within 2 minutes of the game. Perfect. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
The rest of it is all awesome story. Let's do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've definitely done some really exciting stuff with this. The other cool thing that actually caught my attention was the combat system, which has always been kind of a hybrid system. You have two ways to play the game, which is as a kind of FPS type of game,
right,
where you run around, shoot things. You know, you've got scopes and all of this other stuff. And it's actually a fairly good system. Like 90% of the time when I'm playing, say, Fallout 3 or New Vegas, I'm usually actually just aiming and shooting. The other way, though, is a holdover from when it was more of a, I guess, a tactical game. turn-based tactical game in Fallout 1 and Fallout 2.
Right, where you've got the pick your body, arm shot, head shot, whatever.
And yeah, and they call it the VAT system in the newer game. And it seems like they've streamlined that system quite a bit. So that it's feels much less like a, like taking you out of the game, which is one of the, I think my biggest complaints about, New Vegas and Fallout 3 is that it's useful and I use it all the time. You know, when it's something where I don't want to take the time to aim the shot or in close combat, when I, you know, when it starts to get really chaotic, the VAT system is a really great way to make sure you make the shots that you absolutely have to. Or just to take a second and, you know, catch your breath in the middle of a frantic combat. But they seem like they've streamlined it much more so that it feels less like it takes you out of the game and makes it feel more like it's actually what it's supposed to be, which is, you know, the little device on your arm, your Pip-Boy, helping you in combat, assisting you with that. Rather than just being like, oh, and now we're going to go into this. Freeze time.
Freeze,
you know,
time.
Make your shots. It actually seems to slow down time and actually seems to flow better. I'm kind of excited to see exactly how that works.
Just that? Are you sure?
and also everything from the preceding segments.
Yeah. And everything else that we've talked about because Fallout, damn it.
And I know there's more. There's more that I'm just either forgetting. There's like just some really holy crap moments that they kept going through with all of this. Like the, you know, all of the outfits that they showed off. It was like, wow, that's really neat. And then, you know, they call in a, one of the vertibirds, which is the little airship things. And I just kind of like, oh my God. Oh my God. And, you know, fanboyed out, you know, squeed a little bit on that. you know, just all of this stuff that they showed off that I was just like, and then this, and then this, and then, oh my God. And then that, and then, basically, oh wow.
Basically, Adam's brain has blocked some of this out so that he can continue to be a functioning human being.
Exactly.
Remember, do things like eat.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, we'd mentioned, you know, we want to own our own Pip-Boy. Or at least I want to own my own Pip-Boy. So I'm going to tell a story first, and then go into, this is that the last, when I went to PAX, years ago now, I decided to try cosplaying for a day. And I decided to try to cosplay as a character from Fallout, which is, you know, very post-apocalyptic,
right,
you know, kind of look going on. And I tried to build my own Pip-Boy.
Holy shit.
Using an old smartphone and trying to get the interface up on that. And it didn't really work. Like, it didn't look very good. Mm-hmm. It was okay, but I was always like, oh, well, this would be a really cool thing to be able to, you know, use the smartphone as a Pip-Boy. And I think, you know, I still stand by that. And apparently they agreed because the collector's edition for Fallout 4 comes with a Pip-Boy, a plastic housing that can then hold various smartphones within it that you can then download an app from the game that will mimic the Pip-Boy that you're playing with on screen. The
How
best thing
cool would that be if you could like interface with the Pip-Boy on your arm while you're playing the game?
That's the thing they're talking about, is that
Holy
you can actually
shit,
do that. It's
really?
Second screen compatible.
Holy f-
yeah.
Okay, just became the most awesome thing ever.
Yeah, well, and the thing the guy talked about, the presenter talked about when he was doing this is like, listen, I know second screens are kind of gimmicky, but, and it's, you know, kind of these stupid gimmicks that we get, but, and this is a record, it's the best fucking stupid gimmick ever. And I'm just like, yes, yes, it is. So I know what I'm asking for my birthday, which was a month ago, is the Fallout 4 Collector's Edition with the Pip-Boy. Because I want that on my arm. I want that stupid fucking gimmick on my arm while I'm playing.
I will say, I mean, as little as I've played Fallout, that would be badass.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
That would just be badass.
So the other thing they announced that I am both incredibly excited for and incredibly sad about is that they also came out with a mobile game.
Oh, right.
For Fallout called Fallout Shelter that they actually released on a Sunday night, but I have not had a chance to play it yet. because it's only on iOS.
Damn it.
But it is a game that is right up my alley.
It's a vault management.
Exactly. It's a I believe the term used for it is a strategic resource management game, where you build and manage a vault and all of the people in it. And it just looks like a lot of fun. Yeah. In general, you know, even without the Fallout tag on it. And obviously that's a big selling point for me. You know, if you cannot tell from the preceding, however long this segment has been, I love Fallout. I'm a huge, huge Fallout fan. But even without this game, it actually looks really fun. Because I really do enjoy these types of games where you're, you know, managing bases, that sort of thing. And if you've ever played like XCOM, the newer version, excuse me, then
Enemy Unknown.
Enemy Unknown and whatever the expansion is called. Sorry. Mm-hmm. My brain is on Fallout. this is your brain on Fallout, kids.
See what I mean? it had to erase other stuff too,
exactly,
apparently.
Exactly. Anyway, you've got the base building portions within that game too, which are pretty important, and it draws a lot from that. And you know, you build all of this stuff. It's a really great game. If you have an iOS device, specifically an iPad or I think a iPhone 6 are the ones that I've heard that it works on. I haven't looked into it because I don't own one of these devices. You should definitely take some time and download it. It's a free game. It's free to play. And from what I understand, it is truly free to play, is that there's no time gating, nothing that you really have to pay for. There's a couple microtransactions in it, but they are well and truly optional within the game. Like, you can do it if you want to, but it really will not. If you don't, it doesn't really affect your gameplay at all.
Unless you're Adam. Shut up and take my money!
Hey, well, no, I need to save my money so that I can get the Fallout 4 collector's edition. Exactly. but they're eventually going to come out with the iOS version. It's been announced.
Well, the Android version.
They're sorry, yeah, the Android version. The iOS mm-hmm. version is already out there, and I hate everyone who's playing it right now and having fun while God. I'm not. But the Android version is coming, and you can bet that I will be right on top of that.
We're gonna lose Adam for a few days. Is basically what he's saying.
Exactly.
Just like when Hearthstone came out on the phone.
Exactly. Yep.
Pretty he will start. Much. He will start cooking something and then forget about it while he's playing like a few games, or going through and managing his vault.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Pretty much. That's how this. That's how this is going to work.
It's like, that happened. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Bye.
So, Fallout.
That was last week's episode. Stop it.
All right. Well, I need to reset my brain for a second here so that we can move into the next section. And we'll be right back after this word from our Fallout sponsors. Hi there. I'm Adam, one of the hosts of the popular podcast You Might Have Missed It. While I may have many things, including an incredible beard, well-loved voice, and delusions of grandeur, one thing I don't have anymore is an addiction to Fallout, thanks to my time at Dr. Patrick Von Robinson III's Gaming Addiction Clinic. If you're like I was and are obsessed with thoughts of Fallout to the point where eating, drinking, and even normal conversation are impossible, Dr. Patrick Von Robinson III has the cure you need. Through a combination of talk therapy, massage, yoga, and shock therapy, I'm a brand new man, able to function without incessantly talking about the latest Fallout 4 news or hoarding money to try to buy a collector's edition. So if you suffer from obsessiveness over a video game series to the point where you may be a danger to yourself or others, visit Dr. Patrick Von... Hey, is that an iPad you've got back there? Yeah, you buy the craft service table. Can I install Fallout Shelter on it? Get over here. I said, give me the goddamn iPad, you son of a...
Dr. Patrick Von Robinson III's Gaming Addiction Clinic. It's never too late for a healthy start.
Okay, and we're back. Now that Adam's recovered from Fallout.
Fallout?
Shit. Damn it. Okay. So, Obviously, there were other things that were happening during E3. Another thing, one panel that I actually watched earlier today was the Square Enix panel, also known as now the Squeenix panel, Squeenix panel is what we're calling it, because Square Enix is a pain in the ass to say.
Exactly.
Whatever. It works.
And Enware is just weird on the tongue, so Squeenix.
Enware?
Enware, yeah.
Yeah, that is kind of messed up. Okay, so... A lot of stuff out of the Square panel. They're doing a lot of stuff like the Hitman thing, Hitman. Quite a few other games that I didn't give a shit about. Seriously, I'm not even gonna.
I think let's not bury the lead here. Let's just go right into it.
Okay.
There was one game
that I actually, my head exploded when the trailer played. But it was actually yesterday during the Sony panel that the trailer played initially, mm-hmm. and my head literally exploded as soon as it panned up to Cloud wearing the Buster Sword. Well, actually, it was the music started that was the Aerith Flower Girl music, mm-hmm. and literally my eyes got huge. I got goosebumps, and I was like, no fucking way. And then they announced it, and then the words came up, remake. Which, it's if you can't tell from the characters I've just mentioned and everything like that, they're doing the Final Fantasy VII remake. Finally.
Well, they've been teasing it for years.
See, that's the thing. When the PlayStation 3 first came out, they did that little... It was just a tech demo.
Yeah.
And they literally came out and said, this is just a tech demo. We will never remake this game because it will be so expensive, it's not even funny. And then this year, E3, they announced we are remaking the game. Granted, they just started production. Mm-hmm. But I don't care. that means in two years, I might get to play Final Fantasy VII in full, like, awesome.
What always confused me about that when they're like, oh, it's too expensive to remake, is it's like, what exactly do you think the return on investment is not going to be? Like, there are millions upon millions of people.
Did you see what happened to Squeenix's stock price when they announced? Literally, like, just jumped. It, like, spiked for that day and hasn't gone back down.
It's not surprising. I mean, you know.
Stockholders are like, this is going to be fucking gold. Mm-hmm. Duh.
Literally, yeah.
It's like... This is, once this comes out, it's basically money in the bank, and we wouldn't, and that's the one thing that worries me, is like, okay, we're remaking it, we want to make it an awesome game, if they over-remake it. Like, I would be happy if they just did straight-up graphical upgrade.
I don't know if I would necessarily be happy about that, because there are a lot of problems in Final Fantasy VII. And what I'm kind of hoping if they're doing a remake is that they're also not necessarily rewriting the whole thing, which obviously would be a horrible idea, but at least bringing in a lot of the content that got cut from it, because it is a confusing story if you have not gone through and like done your research around Final Fantasy VII. Like the base game itself almost doesn't make sense in a lot of ways. Like, a lot of the character motivations don't really get explored. Some of the characters themselves just absolutely make no sense whatsoever.
This was a game that came out back in, what, 95?
Something like that, yeah. Quite a while ago.
So, I mean, that's the thing. It was the first Final Fantasy game that came out for the PlayStation. It was their big jump into this type of game. And, I mean, that's the one thing I'm worried about. Not, like, story change and everything. Like, they could leave the story if they wanted. It'd be nice if they did a touch-up on the translations, because there were some really fucked-up translations in there.
And I mean, that was a problem.
Yeah.
Final Fantasy VII and back.
Yeah.
Pretty much 8 and up beyond, they could actually afford translators.
Otherwise, it was just really bad. It was like a game designer copy-pasting their entire script into Google Translator. But really, like, the one thing that worries me is if they take, like, the fight mechanics, you know, because it was standard JRPG from that time, you know, turn-based fight mechanics with the little active bar. if they take it and try to do like a Final Fantasy 13 or Final Fantasy 15 fight mechanic thing with it, that would actually almost destroy it for me. I'm not even kidding. That would kill the entire thing. Because that's the one thing that bugs me is that, you know, Square made their money, made their mark as the turn-based JRPG. And now we have to have like all the different little indie people coming out with the games to make up for that. Like, for Christ's sake, what was the Penny Arcade one? On the Rain Slick Precipice of Darkness.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was, you know, one of the greatest turn-based fight mechanics of all time. You know, it's like attack, magic, limit break, items. That's it.
I think what's interesting about that is that it's very much nostalgia, I think, that plays a lot into that.
Yeah.
But a part of that is that it was the limitations of the system at the time. And when they don't have those limitations, there is certainly a point where the turn-based mechanics kind of, they're still trying to hold on to those, but still expand them into something else.
Right.
And it ends up feeling clunky.
Right. Something a little more live action. Exactly. But that's what I'm saying is like really for a Final Fantasy VII remake, you're hitting a gold mine on nostalgia.
Yeah.
And granted, if you do the updates and everything like that, I mean, please get decent voice actors for fuck's sake, because we know you're gonna update it to voice acting. We know it.
What voice acting are they going to do for Cloud?
Because
he doesn't say anything ever, does he, if I remember right?
They could get the same guy they had for Advent Children.
Okay.
He had a few lines in that. Like, literally only a few lines.
Yeah.
He was the definite, like, total silent Cloud in that, too. but, yeah.
I always, for some reason, thought he was mute.
I know,
like, he never quite honestly thought he was mute.
A lot of his lines in Final Fantasy VII were just dot dot dot.
Yeah.
But no, he did actually have a few lines in Final Fantasy VII. But anyway, so that's the big thing, Squeenix, Final Fantasy VII. And that's the only thing that I have right now. I didn't get a big Fallout length. Sorry, I said Fallout again. I'm sorry, Adam. We just lost Adam again.
Well, I think what's interesting about the Squeenix panel is that it was very much focused around RPG franchises.
Oh my God.
Final Fantasy VII is obviously, I think, the biggest announcement that they have that's really coming out of this.
I can't believe they didn't say a thing about Final Fantasy XV. That's coming out this year.
I can see why. There's a lot of bad press surrounding it right now. So I think they're trying to be like, let's not even worry about Final Fantasy XV.
Granted, right, Final Fantasy XV is coming out this year, but we've got all this stuff in the works too.
Or it's entirely also possible that they just had so much stuff to announce that they didn't really have time to go into stuff that they've already announced.
Yeah, they
actually, like, that wasn't part of their marketing plan this time around.
Yeah, their panel was only scheduled for like an hour, and they went for about an hour and a half or so. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they did have a lot to announce.
Well, because, and again, you know, the Final Fantasy VII wasn't the only RPG franchise that's getting an update. Star Ocean 5, which... You had to explain this to me before we started, which is 4 never came out in the U.S. 4
never came to the U.S.
Because I felt like I was missing a game. Because I remember Star Ocean 3, and I still own it. It's still on my shelf.
Yeah, and we had Star Ocean 2, the Silver Star
stuff. Yeah, and I remember that.
Star Ocean 3, and then the one that came out for the PlayStation 3 never came to the U.S.
Okay.
And then now we're getting Star Ocean 4, or 5, is going to be called, they don't number them. Like, it's Star Ocean 2 was Star Ocean, the Silver Star story. This one's Star Ocean, Integrity and Faithlessness.
Which sounds very exciting.
Oh God, yes. I did, but all the stuff that they showed from it, it does look like, almost like classic, kind of a classic-ish JRPG. I mean, they're doing a lot of the, positional stuff like that, but it still has, you know, all the casting and everything like that. It definitely looks like they're starting to get the whole JRPG live action battle thing going. Which yeah. I truthfully I can't wait, because Star Ocean was an amazing game. All of them, both of the ones that I've played so far.
Well, and Star Ocean 3 was also kind of that same live action battle-y thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I think that was actually my biggest complaint about Star Ocean 3 was the combat kind of sucked.
Right, you get that clunky kind of.
The AI wasn't very good. Yeah. And then, like, the enemy AIs were actually really good.
See, that's the thing that bugs me about the new AI system or the new fight system that they're using with, like, because you can only really control one character using that type of using that type of fighting system. And then you have, dear God, I hope this other character does what I want them to, or else we're fucked.
Yeah. Yeah. The squad based systems, I think, and keeping in mind the last one that I played was, I think Final Fantasy 13 or 12. Mm-hmm. One of the one that wasn't an MMO.
Right. 12. Yeah. 12 wasn't an MMO. I never played 12.
The one with the skyships. That doesn't help.
You mean the one with Sid and Biggs and Red? Yeah.
That one.
Did it have the chick with the pink hair?
Yes.
Okay, so it was 13.
13, okay.
Yeah, so that'd be Lightning. She was the main character of 13.
No, different one.
Okay, so it was 12.
It was 12.
Okay, so 12 was actually a bomb, a complete and total flop. 13, not that bad. But then they came out with 13.2 and 13.3, and it's like, yeah. Jesus Christ.
Please, come on. Please stop.
For the
please
love of shit.
Stop.
This is getting excessive.
This is getting out of hand.
It was cute with the 10 and 10.2 thing, and you were like, dresses, yay, but come on.
10.2. Such a horrible game.
Sorry, I'm sorry. 10 had blitzball.
Agreed. The other thing that was interesting is so beyond Star Ocean and beyond the Final Fantasy games, they also announced a new franchise that they're getting ready to start. And
right, they didn't really. I forget what the name of it was.
Project Setsuna. They don't actually have a name for it yet.
Project Setsuna, but they also announced a new production company that they were forming with it, the Tokyo RPG.
Yeah, well, the thing about all of their RPGs have a specific production company or group, and that's always been the case. Is, you know, Chrono Trigger had a group, Chrono Cross, you know, the same group did that.
Oh, yeah.
The same group does the Final Fantasy games.
Right, just like
I'm assuming the same group does all of the Kingdom Hearts games and Star Ocean games and stuff like that. So they all live within these specific groups, but ultimately this seems to be a new one, and that's what kind of caught my attention, is that they haven't really had a new RPG in a long time.
Right, not since Kingdom Hearts started, like a new RPG franchise. Mm-hmm,
exactly.
They've been basically living off the coattails of Final Fantasy, what was it called?
Final Fantasy and
those other two.
Pretty much Final Fantasy.
Oh, no, and Kingdom Hearts.
Kingdom Hearts are the two that they've really kind of been living off of for the last, you know, little while.
The Dragon whatever one is really big in Japan, so.
Oh, Dragonware.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah, sorry, I always forget about that one. But yeah, no, I do. Yeah, now I remember that one.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so those three, and now Star Ocean finally getting another game. Yay!
Well, you got me thinking about, like, Breath of Fire? No, that hasn't been a game in a long time. Oh my God, Breath of Fire.
Dude, wow. Yeah, Breath of Fire 3 was a fucking disaster.
But Breath of Fire 2 was great.
Breath of Fire 2 was great. Breath of Fire 1 was awesome. I have it on my Wii U.
Which is really weird that every time they try and like update these things, they kind of go a little bit wrong.
Yeah.
So I'm a little bit worried about the next Star Ocean, but not that much because they kind of went wrong with 3 already and apparently didn't even deem 4 enough that they would release it into the US. Like, we don't even want to spend the money to translate this.
We're not even going to bother. So, yeah. But Star Ocean 5, they're going to bother. And that was a lot of what they were saying. A lot of what they said during the panel was, listening to the fans kind of thing. And I'm hoping, you never know what that means.
I'm hoping if they're listening close enough, they'll finally release another fucking Chrono Trigger game. Because god damn it, it has been long enough.
I know, when did Chrono Cross come out?
Whatever you have to pay these people, get it done.
Oh, Shenmue.
Shenmue, yeah, that also got announced at Sony.
I can't believe I forgot Shenmue, and funded.
Yeah, funded.
It's set
that night.
Yeah, that night. Within 9 hours, it was funded $2 million. That was the fastest game ever funded on Kickstarter.
Well, obviously, by the time that people listen to this, this number will be completely wrong. But as of a Tuesday night, they are at $2.8 million.
They have my money.
Do they? Yeah. They don't have my money yet.
They have mine.
But I figure I've got 30 days to get in on the...
I pitched in the $29 for the digital copies on my PS4. So.
Well, I have such good memories of Shenmue, and I can't remember why.
I know. It was like Shenmue, the first one, was on the Dreamcast. I think I have it.
I remember playing it on the Dreamcast, and then I remember kind of Shenmue 2, but I don't. I don't remember what happened in that game.
Shenmue 2 was kind of like the little bastard child that could. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like this big, huge game like Shenmue was. God, you could do so much in Shenmue. And so much time spent at that little fucking toy thing, getting those little toys. Oh, my God. I want to see
forklift racing.
Did you see that? Actually, if you look at the Kickstarter, one of the Kickstarter things, one of the tiers on Kickstarter includes some of those little toys.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was the big thing about Shenmue is the collecting all of the little toys. Yeah. It was kind of one of the first kind of games that was like, I would almost say precursor to open world.
Yeah, it was
type of game.
Yeah,
like it was the first time that you just kind of like dirtled around in a game for hours.
Well, and everybody talked about it. It was like, I must get revenge for the death of my father. But first, I'm going to move.
Yeah, exactly.
And feed this cat. Exactly.
You know, all of this, and then you're like, but that's kind of true with all open world games.
Yeah, and that's
even up
and
to this day and age.
Exactly.
I expect that will be exactly what will happen in Fallout 4 with me, is that I will, you know, I must find out whatever, you know, storyline is driving me. But first I really need to find an outfit that matches.
But first, I wonder if I can make it so this steel girder leans against this one just so that if I pull this pin while there's a guy under it, it breaks.
Exactly, exactly. Speaking of Fallout, no, wait, sorry. No, sorry. No. Sorry.
Fallout. This is definitely going to be like the Fallout episode.
Yeah.
Keeps getting mentioned no matter what.
Well, one of us is excited about it, so.
One of us is incredibly excited about it, and the other one is not so excited about it, but still kind of excited about it because I could totally get into that.
Exactly.
But the thing I'm incredibly excited about has absolutely no fucking details whatsoever anyway. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, and we're going to get into this, I think, in the next segment a little bit, but it's unfortunately been true of most of the stuff at E3 is that the stuff that's really exciting about it or the stuff that really caught our attention is also the stuff that they said nothing about.
Yeah, it was like,
and even stuff that I'm not excited about.
I know, it was like, here's a trailer.
They said nothing about.
And that's it. Here's a trailer, and that's it.
Yeah, here's a trailer. Maybe here's some live gameplay or something like that. But none of the stuff they did really told a great story.
Yeah, nothing.
In the same way that I think a lot of the other Fallout did. Right.
Then the last thing that I'm really excited about from the Square panel, and everybody knows my obsession with the Tomb Raider series, Rise of the Tomb Raider is coming out. And it looks awesome. And they actually did a lot of detail. They actually did some of the tech details and everything on the Rise of the Tomb Raider. And just Kotaku had like the best little thing. It was like Rise of the Tomb Raider coming out, and it has some of the best next gen ice. It looks
they're blinging it out.
Well, it looks fucking beautiful. And really, I mean, for a Tomb Raider game, you get into those tombs, you need that dark, dusky, oh my god, shiny, awesome. I mean, that's the whole point of the Tomb Raider games, is you go through the dark hell in order to get to the bling.
Well, I mean, that's how archaeologists, you know, live, right? Is they get trapped on islands and then have to kill to survive, which is why archaeologists are one of the most feared groups of people in the world today.
Look at Indiana Jones, man.
Exactly. Indiana Jones. I mean, my Uncle Doug, I'm scared crapless of him.
Kalima! Kalima!
I cannot tell you how many of his stories begin. I was trapped on a precipice facing down death, and then I killed a million men. Zero of his stories begin
and I pulled out my 6-shot pistol and killed 12 people without reloading.
90% of the time is I had to talk to a farmer to get permission to go onto his land. That is pretty much the story of most archaeologists.
I'm sure.
And then I spent days with a brush dusting things.
Found something cool though.
Yeah. It's cool in a historical sense.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably not that cool from, you know, an outside perspective. I found a trash heap.
It's a coin from the Civil War that I found in the back of a guy's field. It's awesome.
Well, generally that's not what he's looking for.
No, probably not.
He's more the dinosaur and native tribes type of archaeologist. But
oh yeah, they find some cool stuff.
Sure. anyway.
If they get lucky.
Speaking of archaeology, let's hear from our sponsors.
I've been driving this warthog for a long time. Sometimes. Gotta look back. Back at the progress we've made. Fighting the Covenant. Because it's not about destiny. It's about the journey. Gotta keep going. Moving along further. Keep on moving. Keep on driving that warthog.
The Warthog 2660 APC. Built for war. Equipped for luxury. All right, well, we're back, and that had nothing to do with archaeology. I should probably, you know, screen the commercials before I segue into them. But we don't. So, anyway, I think we've spent a lot of time on a lot of Fallout stuff throughout these segments. But obviously, those were not the only things that happened at E3. And like we said before, a lot of the stuff that came up just doesn't have a lot of details with it, including things like, you know, that you might want to know, like release dates or what they're about or any of those types of things. But there is a lot of stuff that we were really excited to kind of watch and see, coming up in the next year or two, that were announced at E3. And some cool stuff that actually, you know, kind of happened at E3 as well. At least on the streaming side of it, the stuff that we were able to watch. I'm going to let you go ahead and start, Nate, with what kind of caught your attention? What was one of the things?
The fact that my Xbox One might be worth a damn here pretty soon.
The backwards compatibility.
The fact that it'll be backwards compatible with like the 360 games. Well, and not just that it'll be able to play 360 games, but that I don't have to rebuy the ones that I already bought through the market, like the electronic ones, since the ones you buy on the Xbox Live market are still associated with your Xbox Live ID, and you don't have to buy them again. Yeah, which that's amazing.
That's really, that's, I want to say it's really cool, but it actually, in my mind, it's just, it's like, that's really something that they should have done from the beginning.
Right. It's something that you should do anyway. But I mean, the fact that you don't have to rebuy them and it's just translating straight over from the 360 straight to, cause I actually have a lot of games on my 360 that I haven't played that I actually really want to because I have the one now.
Well, like the, if I remember right, now you can correct me if I'm wrong because I might be on this. Like the PlayStation 3 didn't have like backwards compatibility to the PlayStation 2 or PlayStation 1, correct?
The initial release of the PlayStation 3 did, but later releases did not.
Okay. Because I remember one of the things that kind of drew me out of the console market was that a lot of these game companies started to go away from that. Mm-hmm. And I understand that there are hardware limitations and stuff like that. But the fact that I couldn't play these old games that I had, because, you know, going into like the, when we, you know, into the disc era, essentially, you know, we went from PlayStation to PlayStation 2 and so on. You know, I was able to play these old games, cross console like that. And the second that they really stopped supporting that was kind of the second I started to lose interest in, a lot of the new consoles. So just the fact that you can get that backwards compatibility is kind of starting, you know, pique my interest again. It's like, oh, okay. So I can actually play these games again without having to keep like 1,000 systems around.
Right. Yeah. That really did bug me too, especially when they started, like as soon as the PS3 came out, the second generation of the PS3 came out, that wasn't backwards compatible. That actually really killed PlayStation, a lot of PlayStation for me. I'm still a total PS fanboy for fuck's sake. Come on.
Well, then the thing about PlayStation is they, and it's one of the systems that I had been looking at is PlayStation 4 at least. And still kind of am. It's still one of those systems where I'm like, I could see myself buying that. Mm-hmm. You know, they've done a lot of stuff to, I think, redeem themselves, and they've come out with a lot of really, good kind of, releases, on those, systems. So there's definitely something to be said about, being able to, release enough good content to make up for that bad point. But the fact that the Xbox One is going to allow you to play those, Xbox 360 games, that could have me looking at an Xbox One more than a PlayStation 4.
That's actually what it did to me too. It was like, oh God, I need to rethink. I actually told a buddy of mine right when that was announced. I actually turned to him and I said, shit, I might have to renew my Xbox Live Gold subscription because damn, that is huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that could be super interesting.
What I'm looking at is like, how does Sony respond to this? Yeah. I'd like to see Sony. My challenge to Sony. Come on. Backwards compatibility. You can build an emulator into an x86 system really easily. Please do it. And then all of a sudden you're backwards compatibility all the way to the PS1. And I'm sorry, fuck PlayStation now. That service sucks.
Yep. So for me, another game that caught my interest, and this is actually a weird game to catch my interest because I'm not normally a fan of this series, in the sense that it's never really caught my eye as being really cool. And the couple times that I've tried to play it, I have just fallen out of it. It's been something where I'll play for like an hour or a half an hour or something like that, and then I'll just be like, well, this isn't really interesting. And it's the Assassin's Creed series. It's the new one, Syndicate. Okay. Which looks super interesting to me. I think partially because I like the time period it takes place in, which is the Industrial Revolution. But it's the first time that I've looked at an Assassin's Creed game and been like, huh, I could see myself playing this. I could see myself really enjoying this. And this is obviously based off of the trailer. I have no clue how to play, but I've heard really good things about Assassin's Creed's games in general, being, you know, really just, you know, good combat, good, exploration and stuff like that. But none of the worlds they've been in have been places I've really wanted to explore up to this point. So that actually caught my eye quite a bit. I know you've played a little bit more of the Assassin's Creed games than I have. Does that one sound interesting to you at all? Or
Syndicate looked pretty good, yeah. Most of what I played actually was Assassin. I played a lot of Assassin's Creed 4 just because of the ship captaining thing.
The Black Flag one.
That was fun as hell. Yeah, for Black Flag. Because of the ship captain, you know, taking on big battleships. It was that was fucking amazing. I've been waiting for another game to come out, which I'll talk about something here in a minute.
Why don't we talk about it now?
Okay, so Sea of Thieves. Sea of Thieves coming out here pretty soon from a developer. I forgot.
Ah, yes, a developer. My favorite developer.
A developer. It's looking like it's from Rare for Xbox One.
Oh, okay.
And it's looking like it's probably going to be like a free to play big thing. And basically that's all it is the section of Assassin's Creed where you're piloting the boat in this big open world. Fuck yes.
So really, you just want to be a pirate.
I really just want to be a pirate.
There we go. All right, it comes out.
No, I will freely admit that. That was my favorite part of Assassin's Creed 4, was I got to be a fucking pirate. I got to take on the British Royal Navy, and I got to be a fucking pirate. I want to be a fucking pirate.
It sounds exciting.
I can't wait.
I mean, who doesn't want to be a pirate?
I don't know anybody who doesn't want to be a pirate.
At least, you know, minus the being stuck on a ship for, you know, years and years, you know, scurvy and, you know, all of the bad stuff about being a pirate.
I want to be a virtual pirate.
There we go.
I think that's true. No, because that's something else too. I want to be an old time. I want to play a game where I get to play a pirate.
There we go.
Yes. On the side of that, Rare actually announced another thing they're coming out with for the Xbox One. I forgot to put this in the little notes thing. They actually are coming out with 30 games for $30. It's the Rare Pack. Mm-hmm. It's all the old Rare games.
Yeah, yeah.
Looks awesome.
No, did actually look really cool. And I have to admit that I looked at it, and I was just kind of overwhelmed. I'm like, I remember a lot of these, but... I don't have time to remember all of this.
Battletoads and Battletoads, Perfect Dark. Those are the only two I needed to see, and I'm like, take my money.
Yeah. Battletoads, especially for me, I have fond memories of that. It was one of those games I never owned and I would always rent, but I would always like rent it and re-rent it because it was so hard.
And
I believe in a legendary sense now. It was incredibly hard to play.
There was that one level. That one level that you had to memorize.
Yeah.
The order.
And I know that I eventually beat it as a child, but I don't remember how. Remember how it ends.
That was just,
I don't remember anything else about that. I just remember feeling very accomplished for having finished that game. And that sense of accomplishment will come back to me anytime someone mentions how hard it was. Be like, I finished that game.
It was.
I don't remember how I did it or why or what happened at the end, but I know I finished. Speaking of games that have good feelings with them, South Park.
Yes!
is coming out with a new game.
Because how many hours did I bury into the South Park game?
Yeah, it's one of the few games that I never, like, I played it myself a little bit enough to get a sense of, like, how it played. But ultimately, it was a game I watched my roommate play.
Okay.
But it was so much fun to watch.
Oh, it was... Dude, I can completely understand that because I spent so much time just laughing my ass off while playing that game because it was basically just like playing through one long episode of South Park. And the fact that they did it to the point where even the combat, was, you know, had like these little like quips and things like that, that it was, that were entertaining, mm-hmm. that it was just a laugh fest the entire way through.
It was funny the entire way through. And what was amazing about it is the pacing of the game and the story is that it started out fairly innocently, still vulgar. But as you go through, it just got more and more and more. And it was one of those things where, like, you know, South Park tests you, like, what point you can stomach for humor.
And then you get to the zombie Nazi aborted fetuses.
Exactly. Exactly. And, like, and you're, bam, like,
wow.
I am really, really glad that I have seen this.
You know, the fact
that, and they, that I was here for the whole trip, because if I just came in for this part, I would just be out. I would just be like, nope, nope. But frankly, it's built up to this. And then, yeah. And the fact that you have to perform an abortion.
Oh my God.
That's a mini game. And it's a mini game that comes up multiple times.
Oh my God.
And it's hilarious.
There, yeah, that, yeah.
But this, this new one seems to, I think, will be in that same vein. And, the name of it, I think, really spells out entirely what it's going to be, which is South Park, the Fractured But Whole. And that's the Fractured B-U-T space W-H-O-L-E.
But you know.
Well, no, you know, because they do it in the trailer. Yeah, is Cartman is like, says it. The South Park game, the Fractured Butthole. And then laughs at it.
I like the, you know, the Butters thing at the very end where he was like, yeah, because pre-ordering is such a good idea. Shut up, Butters!
Yeah. And what's interesting is it's actually a continuation of the previous game.
It is, like, right after.
Same protagonist, sequel. You know.
Yeah.
You are the new kid from the original game. And it actually explores that character more in a similar but different context.
Yeah, they go for their superhero identities, yeah, as, yeah, opposed to the fantasy one.
Those guys, wrong game.
You know what I'm thinking this is going to be? Because the first one was like a turn-based RPG. Mm-hmm. Right. So this one is going to be your Double Dragon side scrolling fight game.
I'm actually interested to see if that's the case. Based on some of the comments they made during the announcement panel for it, because they actually had Matt Stone and Trey Parker come out and talk about it a little
bit.
Man,
I missed the panel.
They had mentioned, like, before, when they had finished The Stick of Truth, they had basically been like, we're never making another game again. The amount of work that this took, you know, it was like playing through a full South Park episode, but for them, it was like producing a full South Park season.
Mm-hmm.
Which honestly, it probably was in terms of the amount of content and stuff like that. It could have been a full season.
With the amount of content, it wasn't playing through a full South Park episode. That was a full South Park season.
But one of the comments they made was that, you know, like, well, we're a bunch of whiny babies was the first one. But we have a framework now for building these types of games out, which makes me think that includes, like, not only the writing process and so on, but also the systems that are being carried in. So, mm-hmm. Well, there may be some aesthetic changes to it. I'm expecting that it'll probably be pretty much the same, like, combat system and stuff like that going in, rather than being, you know, a completely brand new system. And I'm betting there'll be some upgrades and some changes and so on. But I don't think it'll be a complete overhaul based on that commentary.
Okay. So you're thinking it's probably going to be the same kind of a turn-based type system as opposed to like a free, side scroller type thing.
Yeah. Just based on those comments again. Okay. So I could be completely off.
You never know. Cause they're the writers, not the developers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They definitely could go a completely different direction with the game. And, I'll be perfectly happy with that because I think it'll be just as funny.
It's still going to be it's still going to be a South Park game and we're still going to laugh our fucking asses off.
Yeah. Exactly. On the polar opposite of laughing our asses off, Dark Souls 3 also got announced.
Fuck.
At E3. Fuck. Which, having still not made it through Dark Souls 1, and really not planning on playing Dark Souls 2, I realize it's probably a very, you know, good game, very good in Dark Souls. But with Dark Souls 3 coming out, I may finish Dark Souls by the time that comes out. But I'm really looking forward to revisiting that world. Especially given, you know, having seen them do Bloodborne, having seen them, you know, go through all of the trials and tribulations of the last two games, I'm really interested to see what they come out with this time around. Whether it's going to be more similar to Bloodborne, more similar to the original Dark Souls, you know, how much of a big change this will be for them. No details whatsoever on this game, just a lot of hype, a lot of excitement for it. So
I know, right? That's, yeah. See, and that's, and that was what kind of bugged me about the the entire thing, the entire E3. It was really welcome to trailers.
Well, and that's kind of E3 in general. The stuff that we talked about, and like, and again, you know, not going into a Fallout hole here, but that was actually strange for E3, was the amount of detail coming out about a game from Fallout and for Doom and stuff like that. Really, every year, you mostly just get announcements and trailers.
Right.
And then 90% of the actual news that comes out of it is the hands-on stuff on the floor. And that's true for a lot of this stuff, too, is that there's, you know, there is a floor show that obviously we don't have access to because, you know, we are not real journalists with budgets and we didn't actually apply for things like press passes, which maybe we should. In any case, there's a lot of interesting stuff that's going to be, I think, coming out in the next couple weeks off of this. Speaking of a panel that we had like nothing exciting out of, but I still really enjoyed, was Nintendo, which started out with puppets.
Of course.
Of the three kind of heads of Nintendo. And immediately when that started and I saw the puppets, I'm like, you have my attention. What would you like to tell me? And ultimately they had nothing to tell me, but...
Yeah.
I appreciated the puppets, and I highly recommend watching it because it's actually, one, puppets being awesome, and I'm probably the only target audience in the world for that.
For puppets being awesome.
But I can also say, from my professional opinion on these,
oh, God.
Really good puppetry. Like,
I know,
top-notch stuff going on there. I'm actually looking at some of the designs and stuff like that. I'm going to have to look this up, but I'm really curious... who did them, one who constructed the puppets, and then also who the performers were, because a lot of the construction and a lot of the techniques that were being used remind me a lot of the Muppets. And I'm actually curious if Disney or Jim Henson, their production companies, had anything to do with those.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I would be a little bit.
Really?
Yeah, because they tend to be a lot more in-house with stuff. And as far as I know, Nintendo isn't part of that group. They're not part of like the Disney group.
Okay.
Which is where most of the Muppet stuff you'll see will come from. So like if I saw like Star Wars Muppets, I would immediately be like, oh, Muppets. That's, you know, that's Muppet brand puppetry going on here.
Yeah. Those are the Jim Henson guys.
These are the real deal type of thing. But this one I'm actually kind of like, because there's a lot of other groups who do this type of puppetry and a lot of other groups who build that type of quality as well, who, you know, probably previously were associated with the Muppets or the Children's Television Workshop, which again, you know, offshoot of the Muppets. But those are the two big groups and kind of the two big groups that produce the people who are able to do that level of puppetry. But again, it's fun to watch. And if you're a fan of technical puppetry for some reason, really good to watch for that. So, yeah. And interesting segments. And I guess you can go and look at the stuff they announced. I was not excited by any of it. But I expected like new Star Fox, some new Zelda games, stuff like that. Might be of interest to some people.
So. Details! Details! Yeah.
No details there.
No details whatsoever.
No.
They did it. They even had, well, they even had like the Star Fox puppets, so.
Yeah, they did have the Star Fox puppets. And like I said, just watch the opening segment. Yeah. Because that's worth it. They do the little dance. That is worth it.
Oh, no, you can look all the animated GIFs of the puppets are all over the internet right now.
I think watching the whole thing, though, is really where you gotta... Again, though, I'm a big fan of the technical puppetry that was going on there and some of the presentation stuff. I am probably the weirdest audience for that by far. So that's like this is like the most specific intersection of my interests ever, which is puppetry and video games. And we hit this like weird point where I'm like, wait, this has never intersected in this place before for me. So it definitely caught my attention there. But I do recommend watching the opening of that panel, just because it is rather funny. So anyway, I think that's really all that caught my attention. How about on your side, anything else?
No, not really. I mean, there was like the Xbox One backwards compatibility. We covered all the Squeenix stuff. We covered, Dishonored.
Oh, that's right.
The new Dishonored coming out. That looks awesome.
Yeah, I was actually really impressed by the trailer for that one.
Yeah, I can't wait. I want to do some of that shit. actually, the funniest thing, I actually saw a quote. It was the Spider-Man game. It was the trailer for the Spider-Man game that never happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I saw that one on Twitter as well. I was like, okay.
It's like, all right. Yeah. Good. Well, and then I see, I saw that and I was like, really? And then I was like, oh, Dishonored. I want to see the trailer. And then I watched the trailer and I was like, had that in the back of my head the entire time watching the trailer, and I'm like, yep. Uh-huh. That's very
Spider-Man
true.
Why
can't
be like this?
Yeah. It's like, Spider-Man should have been like this, and then I should have been able to stab those motherfuckers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because that's what Spider-Man is known for, is stabbing.
Oh, yeah, I know, right? Is killing the people that he's fighting against. Exactly.
Exactly. It's just like the Batman first-person shooter that I've been looking forward to.
Right. Assassinations for Hire. That's what he does.
Yep.
Oh,
I want to read that comic series, by the way. The Spider-Man as assassin.
Yeah. Spider-Man, mercenary for hire.
Isn't that called Deadpool? No, it's...
Yes. Yes, it is. And that movie is going to be awesome. Oh, no, there is one thing that I saw on the Squeenix panel that I just wanted to make a joke about because they almost made the joke for me.
Prepare for incoming joke.
No, it was like the Just Cause 3. Did you watch that trailer?
No, I kind of slept through that one.
Oh, my God. It was literally just that. Did you ever see the robot chicken Michael Bay thing?
No.
Michael Bay explosions.
Oh,
they actually did that whole thing too. It's like with more explosions and more fire. I'm like, this is what would happen if Michael Bay directed a video game. It's like we have parachutes and shooting dual wielding pistols from parachutes.
Did the parachutes explode?
No. Well, maybe. You never know. I mean, that was just the trailer. No details. Remember, the parachute might explode.
Would you say it was the most explosive trailer you saw?
I will say it was the most explosive trailer because everything on that trailer, everything, bridges, buildings, people exploded.
There we go.
Landmark, everything exploded. Well, no, the enemy, the little guys, the sprites, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
No. Exploded. Everything in that trailer
exploded.
The developers exploded. Yeah. Why? Who knows?
It's going to make it hard to finish the game, but they'll press on.
Explosions. But yeah, that's all it was. It literally was. And I mean, there was like, it's like parachutes and, oh, now we have, not only do we have the parachutes and the grappling hook that you grapple to other thing and then it swaps it together and it explodes. But we also have now the flight suit. And I'm like, wow.
And it explodes.
And then it explodes. I was like, wow, they are doing the Michael Bay thing, because that is totally what happened when you went from Transformers 1 to 2 to 3, because in 3, it was like, oh my god, and now we have flight suits.
Jeez.
I'm like, fuck. God, Just Cause, you became that game. You're just that game.
It's when they introduce dinosaurs that
somebody's going to be like,
nope.
Yeah, yeah. When that happens.
Close it down, shut off the lights, well, we're out.
See, that's the thing, though. They are fine. So if it follows the same thing that the Transformers is doing, which it's totally doing, now that it's on Just Cause 3 with explosions introducing flight suits, the next thing, number 4, will be fucking dinosaurs.
That's the only place you can go, really.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we've done Evil Dictator on an island nation to death, so...
Now it's Evil Dictator, who is also a dinosaur.
Who is now a dinosaur.
Yeah.
That's right. T-Rex the Dictator.
Mm-hmm. Yep. He is hard, but fair.
But no, but they have to make him a fire-breathing Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Right. Not a dragon, though.
Still not a dragon.
Still a dinosaur.
No wings.
No, dinosaur no wings.
That breathes
tiny
fire.
Arms. Well, that has been our E3 roundup, based on all the cool stuff that's been happening. Let us know if we missed anything. If there was something really cool that you saw that you want to share with us, that
all
you
the details about the Steam sale.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we have run out of time.
Yeah.
To go into the Steam sale, so.
Oh. It's happening.
It's happening, yeah. That's something you should probably be aware of, is if you have a wallet and Steam, the two of them would like to meet and make beautiful game babies together.
And take all your money.
Right. Your money being your sperm in this case, I guess. I don't know.
Wow.
Anyway, basically Steam wants to fuck your wallet. and they're doing sales in order to help do that.
They're
and,
fucking
much like the actual practice, you will both leave satisfied. And with a whole bunch of new things that you'll have to take care of. Anyway, maybe on the next episode we'll go over, and because it'll be over by the time we come into the next episode, but mm-hmm. we'll go over with what we bought and what's cool. So, anyway. Again, if you've missed anything from E3 or we missed anything or you're super excited and we didn't cover your favorite game, let us know. And we'd be happy to talk to you about it. And if you just want to talk more about Fallout, hit me up. I will talk to you about Fallout for hours.
For hours. Which you can find us, of course, at facebook.com/YMHMI, on Twitter at YMHMI, YMHMI.com, which is probably what you're listening to this on if you're not on our RSS feed that can be used through Android, Windows, or devices.
iTunes, I believe, would be the...
Yes, yeah. Oh, and we're also live streaming on Twitch occasionally at twitch.tv/YMHMI.
I'm not going to give a schedule for that anymore because I don't think really either of us have kept to that.
No.
So follow the channel. It'll let you know if we start live streaming.
We just do it occasionally.
You can also listen to this on YouTube at youtube.com/ you might have missed it. Although you already know that if you're listening on YouTube. So welcome.
Dude, and the YouTube gaming thing is coming out, but we'll cover that later.
Yeah, now there is a lot of other news that has happened over the last couple weeks.
A lot happened in the last couple weeks.
Unfortunately, E3 kind of dwarfs it all. So,
yes.
Because E3.
Trailers and explosions.
Exactly. So speaking of ending on an explosion, that won't be happening here. We'll see you next week.
Boom.